Welcome to the Eclipse Wealth Podcast. This is your guide to making sense of financial planning and wealth management. It's brought to you by Eclipse Private Office and is here to inform, inspire confidence, and spark ideas that help you take control of your financial future. In each episode, we'll explore the key concepts that drive long-term success. Everything from building a strong foundation to making those all-important decisions as your wealth grows. You'll hear from experienced professionals who live and breathe this work every day, and from private investors who'll share what they've learned on a path to financial freedom. Our first series is called The Client Journey. Each episode takes you through a different stage of the financial planning process, helping you see what's ahead and, more importantly, what's possible. So whether you're just getting started or well on your way, there's something here for you. Let's begin the journey.
Hello. In this episode, we're discussing why time in the market almost always beats time in the market. We'll explore the lessons of history, explain why patience is crucial, and why the biggest gains often come when you least expect them. I'm joined today by two investment professionals with years of experience navigating market cycles. Ian Goodchild is a multi-asset fund manager based in East Anglia, and this particular episode is actually Ian's idea. My next guest is an old friend of the podcast, and joining us today from Exeter, it's James Clark, a senior fund analyst with a background in private client investment management. James featured in Citywire Wealth Manager's top 100 fund selectors in the UK in 2020 and again in 2021. Indeed, both my guests are well-versed in managing buy lists of collective funds and managed model portfolio services for some well-known firms. My name is Max Weatherby, and together we're walking along the X-axis of this client journey. Let's start things off with talking about time in the market. Turning to you first, Ian, often we hear people say, this time it's different. From your perspective, is it really ever different?
Max, I've heard that phrase far too many times throughout my career. This time is different. It's often used to explain what is going on in the market, current market conditions, etc. There are differences in every market cycle. Something will have triggered it slightly differently or have a slight different impact. But in reality, human behavior is always the same. Market cycles are generally the same, and long-term patterns remain remarkably consistent. There's a quote which has been attributed to Mark Twain that history doesn't repeat itself, but often rhymes. And I think looking back across history, you can see that in market movements. Often those large movements, which seem like the end of the world when they're happening, become small blips in history as we look back. So the past may not predict the future perfectly, but there's enough lessons there to learn from them.
That's so true, isn't it? And indeed, we're hearing that quote again. Only last week, I heard someone talking about it, trying to possibly relate to what we're seeing with AI at the moment, back to the tech cycle. James, given that history does rhyme, if we think it does, then how do you think investors should actually use the past to try and inform their approach?
Firstly, Max, thanks for having me back. Great to be back on the Eclipse Wealth podcast. I would say it depends what time period an individual is considering, and I think it massively depends on their own experiences. People can definitely look back and consider what's worked for them in the past. But if they're, say, a less experienced investor, then they would have a shorter time period to look back on and reflect on. So I'm not sure there's a one complete answer to that particular question. Depend on different people's individual circumstances.
That's so true, isn't it? Let's talk a bit about time horizons. People are living longer today. Let's talk about how does that change the investment conversation that one has with clients, or indeed when setting models and portfolios. I know you were looking at some data the other day and talking about that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, with advancing healthcare, with lifestyle changes, etc., you are seeing the average age life expectancy increasing in that respect. And there's some data that I saw from the ONS, which was sent by JP Morgan to me, where a couple at the age of 65, there's a 50% chance that one of them will live to more than 90. So that's 25 years life expectancy. So actually, retirement age has always been 65. It's probably going to keep pushing back out as the alongside the state pension age. But the horizon people have got to think about in terms of investments continues to expand in that respect, and making sure that their investments will provide pensions in particular for their future is even more important.
Well, having just entered my sixth decade, that is very reassuring news indeed. And just quickly as an aside for everyone listening, this podcast We've actually included some of the resources that Ian was referring to in the show notes. So obviously, if you're driving your car while listening to this, then keep driving. But for anyone else, do check out the show notes and you'll find that information that Ian was referring to. And indeed, we're going to make reference to. I think so often on this podcast, we're talking about younger investors and talking about that. How important is starting early? But I know there's some other charts, I think, that you referred to on the JP Morgan pack.
Yes, in that same pack, slide 11, people are looking at it. It looks on the left-hand side there at basically the benefit of starting your pension saving 10 years earlier and what the outcome could be in terms of actually returns, the power of compounding, the power of being invested with having that money invested in the market for a period of time. And the earlier you start, obviously, the longer timescale you've got until you hit that retirement age. But as we said, it goes beyond that. It goes potentially up to 85, 90 in terms of your target age. So the biggest mistake I think that people can make, and there are a lot of commitments to, for people in the early stages of their life, wanting to buy a house, start a family, all of those type of things. But actually, even if you can start with a small amount at an earlier stage into a pension, it can be so powerful in terms of driving that financial return at the end and the income you've got in retirement.
James, this might be an appropriate moment to turn to you because, of course, a couple of episodes ago, you and I were discussing the power of compounding. But just before you pick that up, that graph is there in the JP Morgan pack, and you don't need to strain your eyesight too much to see the graph upwardly sloping. James, talk to us about compounding.
Yeah, Max, a clear link, I would say, between what Ian was just saying and our episode a couple of months back on compound interest being the eighth wonder of the world. And if we apply that to, for example, equity investing, and a link with the show notes that Ian referenced, one example would be reinvesting dividends. So if you were to reinvest the dividends received on an equity investment over time, that's kind of a form of compound interest.
Putting that into context a bit more in terms of history, are there some examples that we can talk to? Are there some more charts and things in that pack that show what history actually does say about holding investments over the longer term?
Yes, there is plenty of research that's been done over periods of time that show as long as you stay invested for a decent amount of time, you've got a very good opportunity to deliver positive returns. There's some research I saw undertaken by JPM, which looked at the American Stock Exchange over a 91-year period, a decent amount of time in terms of that. And over each one-year period, you had a 1 in 3 chance of a negative return, so 2/3 chance of a positive return. But once you increase those periods of time that you were invested in, get to 10 years, you've got 100% chance of generating a positive return. Now, that could be a modest positive return, but at least it's a positive return on your investments over that period of time. And actually, if we look at a period of time, such as 20 years rolling, and we go back to the JPM pack that we referenced earlier that's in the show notes there, slide 17 there shows that a mixed portfolio of equities and bonds would have generated you an annualized return of between 4 and 15%, depending on when that was. So again, taking that longer term view should provide you with more chance, a greater probability, 100% according to the Capital Group information, of a positive return.
I think in essence, Max, the longer your holding period, the more likely you are to achieve a positive and rewarding annual return.
But even so, I think I did see another chart in that pack that I've seen before, which illustrates that even when you get a sort of bump in the road, and we've certainly experienced that this year, we saw markets have a sharp sell-off after Trump's so-called Liberation Day. And then look what's happened since then.
Indeed, Max. So referencing one of the Fidelity notes that are included for reference here today, bad years can often be followed by very good years. And just a couple of examples, if I may. In 2020, the FTSE All Share Index was down 12%, and there was a maximum intra-year decline of 36%. The following year, 2021, this index was up 15%. Another example, in 2008, the same index was down by 33% during the global financial crisis, with a maximum intra-year decline of a hefty 43%. But again, the following year, this same index was up 25%. So just a couple of fairly recent examples showing that bad years can be followed by very good years. And as such, it's often worth staying the course, holding on for that rebound, which can be sharp and substantial.
You're so right, James. I certainly remember 2008. That year, we put our cash to work early in 2009. And quite frankly, I could have taken the whole of the rest of the year off as a holiday, and it wouldn't have affected our performance at all. So yeah, I think those of us, or anyone who thinks they can time those moments, really ought to think again. But I think the difficulty is often when you get a bump in the road, emotions do sort of trip investors up, don't they? How do you think that people can better control their reactions to market swings when that sort of happens? I appreciate, you know, neither of you are client-facing in that regard, but certainly you will be speaking to a market participant, and we're all human after all. How, in your experience, is the best way to deal with that from a human perspective, Ian?
Yeah, it's really tough, Max. It can be with 24-hour media that we have, with social media, with all those elements now, you're bombarded with information about what's happened in the markets. The BBC News at 10 will often lead when markets are down. You won't hear much when they go up. And it can be really difficult in that respect to maintain a balance, to not panic and want to take your money out and have, I guess, that ability to sleep at night knowing that you're in cash, which is safe. But it's often the worst thing that you can do. And therefore, when I speak to clients, when I talk to clients, it's often about the fact that they need to acknowledge that volatility is normal. It's part and parcel of investing in the market. It can be a positive thing. If you're investing on a regular basis, it absolutely can be a positive thing to do. But you need to recognize that your investment horizon is far longer than a day, a week, a month, a year. It's much longer than that. And actually, staying the course, accepting there will be bumps in the road, is part of being a long-term investor. James alluded to it earlier in terms of the fact that often the periods after those market falls can be the strongest periods. And it could be missed if your emotions take hold and you end up sitting in cash.
As a fund analyst, difficult times are often pretty good times too, if you can. Go back and just refresh yourself with funds that you're holding, that you're invested in, that are on your buy list, whatever the case may be, and just remind yourself of the positive attributes of those funds. Why have you got them in the first place? Just look at that manager who you know is a safe pair of hands, who's an experienced investor, who's been there before. You understand the team, you understand the process, you understand what they're trying to achieve, how they're positioned, why they're positioned that way, how they've performed in previous similar scenarios, and essentially just reaffirm your confidence in the funds that you're providing for clients, that you're invested in, as the case may be. So it's difficult, but those tough times can also be good times to just reflect on the funds that you are holding.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is that volatility can be our friend as an investor, but at the same time, patience really is a virtue, and resisting your human nature is hard, but necessary. I wonder if we can give our listeners any useful analogies to that. Ian?
Yes, patience is vital for an investor. It's one of the most important tools in the toolbox, but I could get my soapbox out and stand on my soapbox about the lack of patience that we have in the modern world, the desire to have immediate success, immediate returns in that respect, contrary to the history where people were far more relaxed and would wait. And you could link it to football, which is obviously one of my passions, and the roundabout football managers, where if success isn't achieved within a short period of time, they're sacked, moved on, and a new manager is brought in with a different philosophy, a different approach. Possibly means a change in style, a change in the players that are involved there. Whereas if you look at some of the best teams in history, Ipswich Town are my team, so I could look at Bobby Robson, I could look at Sal Ramsey there, but you could equally look at Sir Alex Ferguson with Manchester United, you could look at Mikel Arteta at the moment with Arsenal. It's those managers who have been given time, who have been allowed to develop, to bring their team together, to coach their team where success comes. A lot of those managers had really tough starts, and the senior individuals at those clubs could well have sacked them and moved on and found a different manager. But actually, having that patience, taking that time, has delivered returns for them. And it's very similar in the investment world. Sometimes you just have to take a step back, and sometimes doing nothing is the smartest but hardest decision to do. Investing typically rewards patience rather than activity.
James?
That reminds me of stage three of the official investment process of a very large, popular, well-known global equity fund. Stage three of its process is do nothing.
It's hard, isn't it? And I get Ian's football analogy. As a Tottenham Hotspur fan, we've had our patience stretched severely over the last few seasons. So let's hope the present incumbent will do something for us. So yeah, doing nothing is often an active decision. Let's move it on. Let's move it on and dig into market timing. Why is that such a trap? Ian, do you want to kick us off there with some thoughts?
Yeah, I think timing the market is an extremely difficult activity to undertake. You have to have perfection of taking your money out of the market at the right time and the perfection of putting your money into the market at the right time. The market is not one entity. It is a collection of investors of differing types. So some technology enabled, some very smart individuals, some retail investors who it's their hobby in that respect. So to make sure that you outperform and can be cleverer than those investors is a very difficult thing to do. And markets can be irrational. They can sell on a rumor and then climb on the actual news coming out. So to be able to correctly call that is really difficult. There are a number of professionals that have built their reputation on calling the markets correctly on one occasion. That can often be called the stop clock phenomenon. If you call something out long enough, then at some point you may well be right in that respect. But it's almost impossible to be consistent and execute that perfectly all of the time. So we'll go back to the point of staying the course.
Because that's true, James, isn't it? Because we're investors and not traders. I think that's an important distinction to make for anyone listening.
Yeah, indeed, Max. I mean, I think to possess really good market timing, if you just think about what somebody might need, an investment professional might need, they would need probably some kind of informational edge bordering on the insider trading, perhaps a macroeconomic news edge. And we all know how difficult forecasting macroeconomic events and data points are. You can just picture somebody sitting at a trading desk with 8 screens, super fast internet connection, algorithms all over the place, news feeds coming in left, right, and center. I mean, I think in reality, it just points to the number of people actually being able to do that reliably would be a very, very small number.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure if it's appropriate here, but does history tell us anything about market timings, especially during big market swings? Are there some charts that we can refer to, Ian, or anything about that?
Yes, Max. There's a document produced by Fidelity entitled Do Nothing. And within there, it looks at an investor trying to time the market, move their money in and out, and the effect of missing the best days. As I said before, those days are often the day after a really poor day in the market. And the ability to be able to come out one day and have the confidence to be able to go back in the next day that all the information is in the market, that there isn't any further surprises, is really difficult. So the information is based upon the FTSE All Share and staying fully invested throughout the period. This is a 15-year period, 2010 to 2025, the end of October. You would have an annualized return of 7.72%. If you miss the best 10 days, that return drops to an annualized return of 4.7%. Miss the best 20 days and you're down to 2.6. Miss the best 30 days and you're down to 0.71. Miss the best 40 days and you're down to -1%. And it's really difficult to make sure that you hit those best days unless you stay invested. By coming out, you'll undoubtedly have those points where you miss 1, 2, 3, 4 of the best days within a year, which, as I say, often come straight after the period of time. We had it with COVID, where we saw a sudden drop in the markets as COVID started to come into the news, became a more global phenomenon. But by 4 months later, the markets had pretty much recovered. And by 5 years later, they were hitting all-time highs. Again, the ability to have the confidence a few days after the news broke to reinvest your money back into the markets, really difficult thing to do.
James?
Just reflecting on that, Max. So missing just 10 days over 15 years creates a difference in annualized return of 3%. That's huge.
Wow, that's massive.
Exactly. Missing just 10 days in 15 years gives you 3% worse annualized return. That's massive.
Gosh.
And it goes back to that compounding point, James, that you mentioned earlier in terms of the greater compounding return you can achieve. Obviously, that has a significant effect on the longer term outcome in terms of that investment.
Ian, in a moment, I hope you're going to relay that story you told me from some information produced by Charles Schwab. So I think our listeners would love to hear that. So I'll just keep talking for a second longer so you can just tee that up. I'm showing my age now, but I do remember back in the 1990s. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but there was a period along the lines of what you just suggested, and it happened in August, when actually if you'd missed that particular week in August, it would have had a massive impact on your returns for that year. If you had followed that old adage, sell in May and go away and don't come back till St. Ledger Day, in that particular year, it would have almost wiped out your entire returns. And I think few of us are clever enough to do that. And hopefully you're going to give us some evidence to back that up.
Yes, no, absolutely, Max. I was doing my prep work for the podcast and stumbled across an article by Charles Schwab published in July this year. It talks about 5 hypothetical investors who each receive $2,000 in a bonus on the 1st of January each year over a 20-year period. So looking back over a decent amount of time there. 5 investors, each different in the way that they would treat that money and what they would do with it in that respect. And I'll go through the 5 investors and just give you the type of investor. I think when we spoke about it previously, I think we could probably all relate to one of the individuals that feels like what we might be as investors. So the first one is Peter Perfect. So he was a perfect market timer. He had incredible skill, or you could say luck, and was able to place that $2,000 that he got every year into the S&P 500 at exactly the right point, at the lowest point of the market for every year, and get it absolutely perfectly into the market at the right point in time. The second investor, Ashley Action, just simply invested the money, received the money, invested the money. No thought in terms of it, just get the money into the market, get it invested. The third investor, Matthew Monthly. A little bit more cautious. a little bit more worried about market movements, so therefore decided to split their $2,000 into 12 sums and equally invest it on a month-by-month basis. The fourth investor, Rosie Rotten. She managed to invest her money on the worst day of every year, the market high of every year, and put her money in at that point in time. And the final investor, well, I say investor, Larry Linger, he actually kept his money in cash, didn't invest it, was too worried about what the market might do or where it might go, and therefore kept his money in cash. And it's really interesting to see the results of the research that they put forward in terms of actually what the outcome might be at the end of that 20-year period. So Peter Perfect obviously has hit every point he should hit with his investment. Absolutely perfect in terms of that. Invested it in the S&P 500 over that period of time, $2,000 every year for 20 years, and ends up with a figure in the region of $186,000. Fantastic. Great return on that. Interestingly, though, if we look across the other investors, so Ashley Action was the second investor that immediately put the money in. Didn't think about it, just immediately. Money into the bank account, out of the bank account, and got the money invested. The return that she achieved was $170,000. So only $16,000 less. Even though she didn't hit the exact right point, she still had money in the market, had it invested, and took advantage of market movements as they came through. The third investor was Matthew Monthly, who put his money in on a monthly basis. And actually, the return that he achieved was $167,000. So only marginally less than Ashley, but still not that much less than Peter, really, who had been absolutely perfect in his investment of money. Rosie Rotten, potentially the worst investor that we've got there, if we exclude Larry, who left his money in cash, she still managed to achieve a return of $151,000. So again, only marginally lower than Matthew, a difference there of $15,000 over a 20-year period. But still pretty good, bearing in mind she invested her money at the worst point every year. Larry, unfortunately, obviously took the very cautious approach, kept his money in cash, didn't really trust the market, ended up with a return of $47,000 over that 20-year period. But I think what it demonstrates is actually, yes, you might get a slight uplift if you're absolutely perfect, but put your money in the market and get it invested. Put it in a way that you feel comfortable doing. So you've got different ways of doing it, but get your money in the market and have your money invested.
It's a great case study. I love the names. It's so funny. And I think we and the listeners can perhaps relate to different hypothetical investors within this case study. I quite like Matthew Monthly. I like the idea of dividing up by 12 and investing on a monthly basis. And I just wanted to quickly link that, of course, with pound cost averaging or dollar cost averaging for any US listeners we might have. So pound cost averaging, the act of making smaller investments at regular intervals, in this case monthly, drip feeding cash into the market effectively. And so effectively what you're doing is, if for example you were buying a fund, you would be buying more units when the unit price of that fund is lower and buying fewer units when the price is higher. So that's a bit of a technicality, but in more general terms, it's perhaps a way to deal with market volatility and also to remove that fear of investing at the worst possible time, like unfortunate Rosie Rotten does. Because if you're drip feeding that cash into the market monthly, it would kind of, or does kind of remove that element of fear about whether you might be investing at a bad time. So overall, I love it. I love the names. And I think there's some good lessons to be learned.
Great point there, James. And you're quite right. Pound cost averaging can be a very useful strategy. It makes sure that, you know, you're not wrong. You may not be right. And I think we all know that Peter Perfect doesn't exist. And if he does exist, he has one great year. And then the next year, he'll get it all completely wrong. Ian, thanks so much for telling that story so well. And of course, to Charles Schwab for providing the data for us. Our time is coming to a close. So if you had one word of guidance to sort of wrap all this up, what would that be, James?
Just try and stay the course. It can be tempting to try market timing, to look for that bottom on the chart, to think about what news you think might be coming up ahead and might give you a better entry point. But I think some of the stats and figures that we've referenced show that that's actually incredibly difficult. Just invest sensibly and stay the course. And as we all referring to today, the old adage, time in the market, not timing the market.
And Ian, since this episode was your idea in concept, any closing remarks for our listeners?
I think investment is about patience. It's about staying calm, controlling your emotions, not getting too het up over what is said at the news at 10, but actually remembering your long-term investment horizon, making sure that your strategy is correct in that respect, not trying to be too clever in your investing approach.
Gentlemen, thank you both so much for your contributions today and your valuable insights. And it just remains for me to thank our guests, Ian Goodchild and James Clark. Just to remember, listeners, that there are some charts. The ones that we made reference to are on the show notes of this podcast. and you should be able to access those and have a look at the points that we were referring to. That's it for today. Next time, we move on to a new leg of the client journey and financial independence. Thank you and goodbye.
If you enjoyed listening to this section of the Client Journey series, then why not subscribe and listen to past and future episodes? You can find out more on our website at www.eclipsewealth.co.uk/podcast. Eclipse Private Office is a trading style of Peregrine and Black Investment Management Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority here in the UK. Please remember that this podcast is for educational and information purposes only. We are not advising whether a certain investment is suitable or not. Don't forget that the value of investments can go down as well as up, and past performance of an investment is not a predictor of future returns. However, if you are interested in discussing any of the topics raised, then please contact Peregrine and Black via our website to arrange to speak with an independent financial advisor. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to join us next time for more conversation along the client journey.